This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Rob, really quick, can you tell me how many Grammys everything you just worked on got nominated for? Have you counted? Do you know?
I think it's 7 different artists that I worked with that got nominations.
I'm just saying, what's the Midas touch between them?
Let's see if anybody wins. There's only one of them that if it wins, I would actually get the Grammy.
Okay, and then once you get that Grammy, can I hold it and pretend it's alive?
Did you do that when you were at my house before when I was not home?
No. When I had your keys? No.
The guys who redid my kitchen all took pictures with the Grammys. Like,
I think they
didn't even necessarily know who the artists were. They were just like, oh, I'll take a picture with this.
No. I would never pour warm milk down your Grammy's throat. That's crazy. I would not do that. I didn't do that. Don't look in that hole.
It's time for
Punch
the GM.
Punch
the GM.
Hey!
Punch the GM.
Punch
the GM.
Good evening. Welcome to Punch of the GM. My name's Miel.
Oh, man. Is that the energy?
I've never recorded an episode so late at night. I don't know what the energy is.
But you have the 3-hour advantage.
I know. You're recording. It's past midnight for you, Rob. This is crazy. You're crazy, man.
As of a few months ago, this is where my creativity lives, I guess.
I know. Since the last time you were more than the weatherman and you were actually co-host, guest, whatever you feel most comfortable with, since that time, you have made an heir for your viola empire.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for you both. Not so happy for your sleep schedule. That seems like it blows.
It's evolving. But yeah, I was trying to remember when Black Hole Sun was. That was still in 2019, right?
It was in a different life.
And I was just looking through my folder of like where I do the weatherman segments. And this is the 30th thing.
The 30th?
That I'm recording.
Oh my God, it's just like me.
Not bad.
I'm not 30. Rob, that's amazing. I'm so happy you're back. I can't. Every time you do the segment, I'm like, God, that was great. Sure wish I had more information. And more of that moose charm. They've been getting so charming. Like, not that they ever weren't, but you are hitting a charm stride. And I think this is your zenith right now.
No pressure.
I think we're to blow the charm out of the water. Speaking of charm, are you ready for your very charming intro I worked really hard on?
Oh my God, definitely.
You know him as the weatherman on this show, an expert musician and Grammy Award winner, Robert Jessica Parker Moose. Did I get it? Is that your middle name?
Oh, I am living for that. It's just disappointing when you say my actual middle name, you know?
This is the thing about me, and I think I would learn this 3 years into this podcast. I'm not good at thinking up names on the fly. I always just say the real fucking name. But which one it is, the world will never know. Rob, thank you for coming back on. I'm so happy you're here again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I miss us.
I know. You up and went.
Don't say that.
Okay.
We're always together and in your heart.
Speaking of middle names, so we're obsessed with the idea that our son is going to become the first or second or 17th or 20,000th male supermodel.
Of course.
And as a result, I've started calling him Milo Tyson Moose in my head to reference another 90s R&B, you know, music video star.
Tyson Beckford maybe wasn't in this music video, but he absolutely should have been.
He could have been.
He absolutely should have been. I can't believe the song came out in 1995. That shook me deeply and has still shaken me to this moment. I felt like if I had to guess, it would have been 1995?
For me, it coincides with the first summer I went to a sleepaway camp for only 1 or 2 weeks. And I remember watching this music video it was in Kansas, and it was like this 2-week string camp thing. And so I knew it was 95.
Okay, hang on. A lot of follow-up questions. First of all, you're from the New England area and you went to a sleepaway camp in Kansas?
It's like music related. You know, you go where they need you to be.
Okay, so follow-up question. There's a string-specific sleepaway camp for young men in Kansas?
Can we remove sleepaway and can we not make it male-specific? Because it was not.
I'm just processing, Rob. We all process in different ways. Okay, there's just a lot to take in.
Can I call you Male Bredo?
Yes, you can. Okay, so you were perfecting your viola craft at the tender age of 13?
There was no viola for me back then.
Violin. Sorry, sorry. Your first love.
I guess I was turning 13 that summer, yeah.
And you were in there quietly jamming to Mariah Carey in Kansas.
You know, I had a green tank top. I was playing pool. She was on MTV. I was there.
Okay. I'm going to need to hear more about this green tank top and the pool table at the sleepaway
for sure.
camp for stringed, gifted, young individual men.
Men.
Okay,
yeah,
so
anyway.
What was it that struck you about this tune? This, I know that you loved a lot of like grungy, metal-y stuff. This doesn't strike me as a Rob Moose classic, and yet,
yeah.
What was it?
I think, I'm not sure if I had tapped into my appreciation for the song itself at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when that
mm-hmm.
happened, but I think maybe the tire swing had more to do with it.
And the video, you mean?
Yeah, Scandal.
The video was about like kids at camp, right?
Yeah, and where was I?
At camp. This is for
it's
you.
It's all coming together.
The baby was Rob Moose at string camp. God, what a life. If I could just live one day.
You know, at the end, they dive into the water and they kiss and like, you know, how is it even possible? How do you kiss under the water? I've never tried that.
You didn't try kissing underwater at sleepaway camp for violin children boys?
I don't think there was water. It was so landlocked.
Kansas. It's like a Mad Lib, the whole sentence. That's amazing. Wow. I don't know how I'm going to continue being... Hang on. Okay. Woo. Okay, I have some notes. It's off her fifth studio album, Daydream, which I have more about in a second. But the first I need to tell you, do you know that Jermaine Dupri and Manuel, I did not look up how to say his name, Seal, co-wrote this song?
Yes, very much. I'm obsessed with them now.
Okay, was that common information?
No, because I think of Jermaine Dupri as I remember he had a track that a year or two later, in the same way that like Puff Daddy became an artist after being kind of a more of a behind the scenes person. But I never would have thought that he was the type of person to like write a song like this.
Me neither. I thought of Jermaine Dupri as obviously first and foremost Janet Jackson's boyfriend, but also like as an artist himself, or maybe, I don't know, from the classic seminal song, Nelly's Grills. so deaf, that little drop he does at the top of all the songs he produces. So to find out he co-wrote this song,
yeah.
And also that they co-wrote all of the best songs on Usher's iconic record, My Way, I didn't know any of this. I have this comment. This is the real dirt. I got alerted to something absolutely pants-shittingly amazing by my patron, Ermintrude Lavash. They said, what is absolutely wild to me is that during this time, Mariah recorded an alternative rock album with her roommate just to let off steam. Did you know this?
Is it available?
Mariah herself just posted a clip to her own Twitter in like promoting her book where she talks about it, because she just released like an autobiography,
yes.
I guess. So she tweeted, fun fact, I did an alternative album while I was making Daydream, just for laughs, but it got me through some dark days. Here's a little of what I wrote about it in The Meaning of Mariah Carey. Shout out to my friend Clarissa, / former roommate, who performs the lead with me as a hidden layer. So Mariah just was like making Daydream, writing these songs, and then on the side making music like this. Crazy?
That reminds me of like Garth Brooks's side project, Chris Gaines or something. He made up a name for himself.
What?
Similar era. He was like, okay, I've conquered country. I've sold like 200 million records. I need to make like a rock album. And he called himself Chris Gaines, and he wore like a wig, or he had like kind of like his hair was brushed down
what?
And was dyed black. And it, I think it was a flop, but it happened.
But it wasn't ironic. He did this seriously.
Oh, dude. Yeah. There was like a whole VH1 special, like, Yeah.
Oh, I miss the past. I always have, but I miss it especially now finding out this information. Oh my God. Oh,
I guess that back then you could like kind of disappear and do something and then come out with it and people would be surprised. And now I just feel like everything is kind of in public view. So there's no like incubation period for anything.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. The constant stream of sharing doesn't really allow for much secrecy. And also like, I don't feel like you're so allowed. I don't know. Maybe you weren't then either, but I don't feel like you're very allowed to be a multi-hyphenate in terms of genres. You know what I mean?
Mm. Depends if you come up in a specific thing. I think people are kind of starting off in everything now, but I feel you.
Mercury said also, the quote continued, I was playing with the style of the breezy grunge punk light white female singers who were popular at the time. You know, the ones who seemed to be so carefree with their feelings and their image. They could be angry, angsty, messy, with old shoes, wrinkled slips, unruly eyebrows. While every move I made was so calculated and manicured, I wanted to break free, let loose, and express my misery, but I also wanted to laugh. I totally looked forward to doing my alter ego band sessions after Daydream each night.
Okay, she's definitely like making fun of the Breeders, right?
Or Hole or Garbage. Yeah. I don't know who she's making fun of. But in any case, I'm so blown away. I don't think I've ever known much about Mariah Carey other than obviously one of the voices of our generation, if not the voice. I did not know she was so good at songwriting. Mm-hmm. I did not know how much of her own stuff she wrote. I did not know how incredibly involved she was in the whole process and the production and her own background vocals and everything. And honestly,
yeah,
say what you will about her, but she seems like such an incredible performer in every sense of the word. I mean, such a hard worker. Imagine going from recording an album all day every day to go record your other album all day every day. Like, that's just insane. She's so committed to the craft. I'm blown away by that.
I just have one question.
Okay, I can't answer it, but I will try with confidence.
I was reading up on the Jermaine Dupri angle earlier today, and he was talking about, in some interview, how challenging it was for him to work on this album because the hours were like 9 to 5, and he was like, I'm...
like a day job?
Yeah, he was like, I'm used to working, you know, all night, and he said that every day at 5:30, Tommy Mottola would come and pick her up and take her to dinner. And he was like, it didn't matter where we were in the song. By 6 p.m., she would be leaving and we would just have to pick up the next day. So maybe they had dinner and then she went and recorded her side project. Or someone's lying, Miel.
I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of I'm going to make this one word, divatitude. Not apologizing. I'm not going to apologize for that. Obviously, when you have that much talent, yeah, if you're going to leave at 5:30 every day, you're going to leave at 5:30 every day. I kind of get it. I don't say I respect it, but I do get it. Mm-hmm. Are you ready to actually get into the song?
Oh, yeah, please.
That is, count them, 25 seconds of vocalizing before the beat drops.
I know. And that's only half of the intro.
That's not even half of the intro.
No, it's exactly half.
That's incredible. Yeah. I'm blown away by the confidence.
I know. And when I was watching the music video to study up, I thought for sure they were going to have made like a video edit. Nope. It was like all four cycles of her in the tire swing, riffing, like no problem.
If you're going to go for it, go for it. And also, can I draw attention to this riff in particular? One more time. Okay, that's me eating something way too hot to be eaten and trying to make it work. Like, you put the pizza in your mouth. Desperately trying to make it work without spitting it out.
I love it because
that's the exact sound I make.
It's got a Whitney vibe to it, like she's turning away from the camera or something.
Did they actually have a rivalry, or was that all marketing that I fell for?
Oh man, I have no idea.
And so now you always go back and have to really examine.
They never
it.
Did a track together or anything, right?
No, but like, you know, they were always putting them against each other, like Christina and Britney style. I have no idea if there actually was anything there or if it was just the media not wanting two women to thrive, but it literally is me eating a bite of pizza that I will need to seek medical attention for later. That is exactly the sound.
Oh my God.
Same confidence too.
Yeah.
Okay, then we get the second half of the intro, which is still not the song, but it's at least the part that you can sing along to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess you could have sang along to the first part too if you're brave.
If you're a really good singer.
Or brave. More of a voice. What do we even call that section?
That's like intro B.
Intro, so intro A and intro B.
Well, really, you know what I realized? So I listened to the song 45 times today, probably. And not that I needed to, but I just like, I really wanted.
That's a flex. You're just flexing.
Yeah, I'm telling you how much time I have, like, you know. But, and I said to my wife, I've just listened to this song. I think I could listen to this song all day and be happy each time. And I'm not sure there's another song I feel that way about, but I learned so many things in my little listen. I'm going to try not to be like the boring weatherman for too long, but like...
Wait, no, that's what we want. That's what we want. I can scream about eating pizza that's too hot, and then you can tell me what's actually happening. That's exactly what we want.
There's like the perfect amount of very few things happening and like so much happening. And what I realized on listen seven was that the second half of that where the beat comes in, like they actually give you the whole form of the song in the intro. That's why it's so long, because it's like verse two times, chorus two times. And the only thing you don't get is the bridge, because you can't spoil the bridge. But there's like all of the elements are there. And the second half of the first thing that you played, there's this little like bass drum thing that comes in every downbeat, and everything else is just like floating around it. And it's such a cool, subtle. I just didn't know that they were doing arty shit on like the bottom of a track. And that for me is like the discovery of listening today was like,
why would they?
There's so much arrangement on the low end of this that I, and as like a high end person, I'm like that. And also thinking of Mariah's riffing as like a string arrangement kind of helped me see the whole thing differently today.
Okay. Excited to hear that punch up now, which spoiler, I didn't do, but someone else did. It wasn't me. Also should mention, there is an announcement at the end of this episode, so stay tuned for that if you want to hear it, but definitely stay tuned for the punch-up. I think I hear what you're saying, and I think what you're saying is it's a lot like the movie The Sixth Sense in that it was right in front of you the whole time, but it took you seven listens to see it. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
Exactly
yeah.
Like that?
Yep. We was one, babe, for a moment in time, and it seemed
everlasting that you would always be mine. I think I should say my thought first, because I think it's probably the most thought-provoking thing I've ever said. We'll get to your, you know, intelligent stuff in a second. But I think the first thing that needs to be said is that I think the only Myers-Briggs test that actually matters is when you hear the word everlasting, do you think gobstopper or tuck?
What's the second one?
Thank you. Okay, so you're the first. Well, there we have it, folks. Rob Moose is a everlasting gobstopper. I'm a tuck everlasting type, and that's the difference between me and you. And now to you, Rob. What if every time you spoke?
I don't have anything yet. What was that? Part of a verse?
She said, we were as one, babe.
Yeah.
For a moment in time, and it seemed everlasting that you would always be mine. Sounds like they broke up, if you ask me, but what do I know? I'm just a scientist.
I started listening to this song, like, diabolically, as if Tommy Mottola wrote it for Mariah earlier today.
I'm going to admit at this point in the podcast, I don't know who Tommy Mottola is.
Oh, okay. He's her first husband, who was, like, a fancy record company president, and he's the guy who, like, picked her up for dinner because he was, like, 20 years older than her or more, maybe, and, you know.
Okay.
So I feel like some of her later albums after this were him getting out of that relationship and all the things that she became once she was kind of beyond it.
But Tommy Motorola sounds like kind of a scary dude. I don't know that I love this story.
No, I don't think it's lovable, but you know, it's what gave her start, I suppose, but I don't know a lot about it.
Huh. Well, okay, so maybe this was about him, or maybe my theory, which we will find out in the next verse. But I want to ask you one more question. Technically speaking, when she goes on, hey, you will always be mine,
mm-hmm.
for that vocalizing, would it be fair to call that a Frito scoop?
Oh, a Frito scoop.
That's what it looks like in my head.
I would call it a triplet swoop.
Okay, well, some man's triplet swoop is another man's Frito scoop. I guess we'll have to just move on.
Yeah, I'm a gobstopper.
Cut you there, but yeah, yeah. I need to ask the question on everyone's mind. Is she married to a bird? Is this the plotline to Howl's Moving Castle? Isn't it crazy that Mariah Carey is the Queen of Christmas when Mariah Scary is right there? Or Pariah Carey because her baby left her? I'm just saying. A lot of questions.
Oh my God. Okay, well, you did warn me that some of this was going to come up, so...
How do you feel about the keyboard sound?
Well, which one?
Because the main chords they're just holding.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty plastic. I mean,
it's tough.
Yeah, even more so in the intro, there's that kind of quote unquote guitar, but I really think that's, I think it's all keyboard.
It's definitely all keyboard.
That's Mr. Seal. I did ask a producer engineer that I know who recorded Mariah for like a previous album. I was like, can you listen to the song and tell me what you think that instrument is? And he was like, it's a Roland J. And then I lost it. But and he said that the way that if you're listening to that on headphones, the guitar is kind of going back and forth in the different channels. And he said that's a cheap like synth preset that wasn't even manipulated in the studio. That was just like what that thing sounded like.
I'm so relieved to hear you say that because I actually wrote down this sounds exactly like the couple times on this podcast where I've tried to do punch-ups by downloading a MIDI version and then just like attaching instruments to it. Oh. It's exactly what the actual instrumental for this track sounds like.
Yeah.
With the exception of the live instruments, which obviously sound much better. But the synths on this, like, they sound quite cheap.
I don't think anything is live except for vocals on this track.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's like a keyboard bass, it's programmed drums, and it's like those two. There's like kind of a droney thing in the intro that you can't really hear, but glues it together. There's that fake guitar thing, and then there's like a fake piano.
Hey, well, I mean, I guess I never noticed until listening critically, so I'll give it to him. And also, when you have a voice like Mariah's, maybe it really doesn't matter what the background sounds like because no one's paying attention anyway.
And it kind of helps set her off a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. And also, like, I was thinking about it, too. She's vocalizing kind of constantly.
Yes.
Like, it's very rare for her to not be making sound or even singing on top of herself. It's kind of nonstop the whole song. It's like how a Hallmark movie puts music under every single scene. There's not a moment of silence. And at first I was like, that feels a little self-indulgent. But then when I started paying attention to the texture of those synths, I was like, maybe we needed it, though. Maybe this is hiding a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I keep wondering about how I actually feel about her vocal here because she's so impressive. And earlier today when I was listening, I was thinking, I wonder what Joni Mitchell thinks of this because in a way it's sort of like, to me, it's like a sequel to some of that incredibly like virtuosic, free, intuitive singing that you hear on like A Case of You or something back in the day.
Case of You, yeah.
Has there been like a singer that fluid and good since then? Not like overtly from like a, like in a... I mean, not Mariah Carey's not folk, but like, I mean, she's not gospel either, like straight up. Like, I think like Aretha Franklin and Whitney Houston, like those people, I don't know who's the best singer of all those people, but somehow it was just reminded of Joni Mitchell. But then there's something about it that feels like those riffs. I just wonder how planned, how arranged they are versus if they are off the cuffs and like what her kind
intuitive.
Of head is about it. Yeah. I can't decide.
Some of them do feel unnatural in a way that feels like mm-hmm. they were planned, but at the same time, like who could know except Mariah herself? I do think Ariana Grande. I don't know if you've heard of her.
Ariana.
She is the woman whose name is actually Ariana, and I'm not good with my tongue. I think it's too short for my mouth. I think she does sing from the heart in her riffs. I get that sense that it's all just kind of like coming as it comes, but maybe that's all branding. Maybe I just like her Twitter presence. You know what I mean? What's the difference anymore?
I mean, if you watch Bieber's YouTube documentary, like you'll think he's a great artist too.
Do you mean Never Say Never?
What's the new one? Is that it?
Oh, I didn't.
I watched
didn't
it all.
Was a new one. I was trying to shame you for not knowing the name, and I don't know the fucking name.
I don't know the name, but we watched all that shit, and I love him actually. But like, it's just it's. I think there's a powerful branding presence around these people. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to know who's great, but I do think that like when you hear Mariah singing, nothing has been treated or, you know, the intonation is what it is. Like she's laying it down.
Man, I miss that. I feel like that's kind of akin to what you were saying earlier about like, you know, Chris Gaines or Mariah Carey trying to be Courtney Love. It's like people did shit for themselves in a way that I'm not sure exists, at least publicly anymore. Like everything is like, oh, and this is for some big fucking documentary I'm working on, or this is because I'm gonna post about it. Like, does anyone in the public eye do shit genuinely anymore? Like, just fucking fuck off and have some fun without posting about it? I don't know why I'm asking these questions. Are you ready to hit the chorus?
Okay, sure. I love how it flips to like the background texture as the main thing. And it's probably just like 12 of her or something, but I think that's so cool.
Yeah, I heard she insists on laying down her own background vocals, even if they then later get other singers to add to it. She always wants to sing alongside herself because she knows exactly what to expect.
Mm-hmm. There's one low octave thing that I was trying to figure out. Is that her? Because it hits this low note. It's just the main thing, an octave down, but... And somebody
oh,
who
you
has
mean this? It, you'll always be part of me. I'm born in
Was it you actually?
Boy, don't you know you can't escape me? Oh, darling, you'll always be.
You were probably still eating meat in 1994, and you could have hit those notes. Even though you were five, it was all that cow.
I got burned by the moose. I have a lot of questions. Are you ready? I have no answers this episode. Only questions.
Yeah, me too.
Is this the number one use of indefinitely in a pop song?
Part of you indefinitely. Yeah, and does she use it correctly? I don't even know what's going on.
Did she discover that she could use indefinitely for this purpose by typing into some kind of pre-Google Google synonyms for forever that rhyme with baby?
Yeah.
Next question. Don't you know you can't escape me? A lot of people think, you know, oh, stalker. I have a different query. Is this the first number one written from the perspective of Alcatraz?
Or Tommy Motorola.
Or Tommy Nicky Tony. No way you're ever going to shake me. Got to rephrase that last question. Is this the first number one written from the perspective of a rare co-write between Herpes Simplex 1 and 2?
Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry. Oh. I'm so sorry about all these questions. Someone had to ask them, and unfortunately, I'm that brave soul.
Yeah, I mean, when I was 13 and the song came out, I had a lot of questions, too.
Oh, like, how do I get in that tire swing? Anyway, should we go to a break? I think I need a break.
Okay.
Hi.
Hey.
It's me. And guess who?
Robert Bartholomew.
You just stole my brother's middle name and you tried to play that off.
Is that
his
name?
I just stole my brother's middle name. Yes, that's my brother's middle name.
I knew it came from somewhere.
Looks like we're both bad with names, huh? Looks like we found that out about ourselves tonight. It looks like we got a lot more in common than we thought.
Thank heavens.
Just let that sink in for a minute. Well. I ain't gonna cry, no. And I won't beg you to stay. If you're determined to leave, boy, I will not stand in your way. But inevitably.
Inevitably. Mm-hmm.
That was my other question. Was that the number one use of inevitably in a pop song?
Yeah, she's like rhyming with herself from a previous life at that point.
Yeah, there's a lot like between everlasting, indefinitely, inevitably. I'm like, Did you read something from like the Renaissance period before you wrote this? There's certain
fairy tales.
I want to eat a turkey leg when I listen to these lyrics. I never knew she was saying inevitably, and I also never knew in the chorus that she was saying time can't erase a feeling this strong. Never knew that.
It's beautiful.
It's stunning. Okay, a couple more questions I have here. At first, I thought, this actually isn't a question. This is a powerful and brave statement. I thought she was saying, like, wow, you know, I'm just so emotionally secure that I don't mind that you're going to break up with me because I have such faith in our love. Mm-hmm. So go and do your own thing and I'll be here whenever you realize your mistake. Fine. But now I kind of think maybe she's coming from the perspective of like, yeah, you can say we're broken up, but I'm still coming over.
Scary.
Mariah, scary. What did I say? It's right there. Queen of Christmas. We have it all wrong. I think she should have stood in his way because I personally love the drama of a basketball block in a breakup. I think she should have activated Lisa Leslie mode and just not allowed him to leave. I think that's an effective method.
Maybe she wasn't able to plant both feet in time.
She couldn't get that pivot.
No, she couldn't take the offensive foul.
The screen queen? I don't think so. That's a title belongs to me when I was 9. Because guess what? I was a fat little kid and I could plant my feet and screen. That's a true story. Another true story, which I have to start by asking a question. Have you ever had a breakup and not cried?
No. No.
That's some psycho shit, right?
Yeah.
I cried today. You want to know? I mean, I cried hard, Rob. I cried really. I cried so hard my dog hid under the bed for 2 hours.
I'm sorry I rescheduled this so many times.
No, I wish that's a better reason to cry than what actually made me cry. I cried because I waited on hold for the DMV for an hour and then they dropped the call.
Oh, man, that is brutal.
I'm not saying like, ooh, I was like, fully sobbing. So imagine for a second, my man just walked past my failed screen attempt and out of my life. And I was just like, I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry.
I mean, maybe she's just planning on killing this person later in the song.
I do feel that there is something sinister happening in this Mariah's. I mean, there is something sinister happening. You'll be back again. You'll always be a part of me. Are they blood brothers? You'll always be a part of me.
Or she's saying she's pregnant.
Oh, that's a... When you put it that way...
Yep.
You'll be back again. Cause you know in your heartbeat, our love will never end, no.
You'll always be a part of me. I'm part of you indefinitely. Oh. Boy, don't you know you can't escape me. Ooh, darling, cause you'll always be my
the
baby.
The linger on part, too.
I think that answers my question. I think that she could be singing the chorus background vocal part down an octave because she hits that no, that like E.
Oh, you mean no, no,
you'll always be a part of me. Like singing it in the guy range. I think that could be her because
whoa,
of that
speak
riffing.
For yourself.
I know, but do I have to say the thing about the veganism again?
Oh, okay, right. Well, the lack of meat.
You can't
okay.
hit those low notes. You just don't have the like the phlegm
the
for
iron.
It.
The iron. I want to ask about the time can't erase a feeling this strong. Okay, close your ears and your heart. Listen, what does this sound like to you? What do you hear?
A magical moment for her, possibly, that no one else should hear.
We get it, Rob. You had a baby and now you're positive. I don't know how this happened. I guess maybe the body changes when a man has a kid. I don't know. But no, that's not what I was trying to say. The sign can't erase, of course. The haberdasher event of the year. Have you not been?
I'm completely lost, Chef.
Sign can't erase. The sign can't erase. The sign can't erase. Greyhounds or horses, you decide. Hats. Hats either way. This is what happens when you make a podcast after 9 p.m.
Wow. Why are you saying time with the letter S at the beginning of it?
I'm just listening. Why don't we listen? Why don't we just listen right here? I've turned it up for you. Do you hear that T? Nope.
Yes.
That's an S. No further questions.
Have you ever used compression? Definitely not personality compression, for sure. You haven't used that.
I don't know the meaning of the word do less. That's two words. Again, I said no further questions. I don't know where to go from here except the bridge, but I don't feel like I'm ready. Are you ready for the bridge?
I thought you would really want to talk about the bass guitar here. I mean, I know they're not doing any woo, but like to me...
Then I'm not interested.
Yeah. Okay. So it's like, even if it's great bass, if it's subtle bass, you can't hear it.
I literally cannot hear it. It's like I have tinnitus for a subtle bass track.
I just want everybody to like listen to the chorus of this song and just only listen to the bass and think about like what that shit is doing. Because I think if you took that away, and two places where it goes away are the bridge and the reintro and the fifth cycle of the chorus outro thing after she brings in that incredible melody.
The counter melody.
Yeah, you can hear, you know, you and I thing. You can hear where it goes away, but like the composition of the note choice and the rhythms and all the space, I feel like it's very kind of reggae informed where the bass, it holds it down, but it also plays this like independent melodic part. And I'm just so in awe of it. And I'm also like more in awe of it because I know it was like played on a keyboard and I don't even understand how it's possible to have that much like vibe.
Yeah, how do you intuit a bass part on a keyboard?
And the little slidey thing, and like it just feels very played.
Can I quote your text from earlier today?
Yeah.
It's one of the best bass songs ever. The composition in the chorus is profound.
It really is.
And you know what? Despite that text, I still can't hear it.
And there's one other thing.
Hmm?
The
Oh, when you said lose my number after we finished taping? I didn't think I should say that on air.
It's the same guy playing like the piano, fake piano thing and the bass, but like every single cycle, he starts the bass line on a C sharp and he's playing an E chord in the piano. And it's just like this cool, can you hear this?
Yep.
It's just like this really weird clash. And I don't know why it happens every time. And it's kind of like,
can you play each note individually?
The song is in. But for some reason, he's playing as the bass line each time. And so when you hear these two notes, these low notes, like that's a very normal interval to put together. But when they're that low in the register,
what is the interval?
It's a minor third. Mm. It just kind of like, it's just like a little cloudy and a little bit like, what did I just hear? It sounds like a drum that's like tuned in a funny way and is like clashing with the song. And I spent so much time just like tracking it down. And I'm 100% sure that like homie one is playing C sharp and himself later or before is playing E at the same time, and he does it every time. And when they modulate after the bridge, he still does it on B flat and D, and it's D and F, and it's just like this weird little thing, but it's part of the bass mastery, and I don't even know why.
So what you're saying, I think I get it. What you're saying is it's stinky.
Yeah.
It's a little stinky. It's unexpected stink.
But it's not like out and out wrong. It's just like, it's just a little bit like quirky.
Stinky. I think we said it. It's stinky. And if you say stinky, you're wrong. It's stinky. Do you want to try it?
I'll abstain.
Okay. I'm going to play the bridge, and I would like to point out, just pay attention to all the instrumentation for the bridge, please. Ignore the vocals. Just pay attention to the instrumentation.
When your days and your nights get a little bit colder. Oh, oh, oh.
So square.
So square.
You'll be right back. Baby, believe me, it's only a matter of time.
It's amazing, the little treadmill. You hear that little treadmill guitar thing that like... And then he does this... or whatever for that modulation. It's like so dorky. It's like flash dance.
It's so insane. It sounds like you were having a jam sesh in the garage and your kid sister came in with her Casio and was like, mind if I join? And she slapped a couple chords on all on the one with no vibe and no feeling and no swing. It sounds like it was quantized, like, way too aggressively. It's just, and it the way it's dead immediately and the way it just disappears the second the band comes back in. I gotta hear that again. It's just gone.
That's that nylon guitar thing from the intro that just comes back there.
Honestly, what a breath of fresh air it is over that. I didn't know how aggressively the vocals carried this song until I listened to that today and realized I've never noticed how incredibly uninteresting the music is here.
No, you're right. Like, the chord progression is cool, but the way it's rendered, other than the masterful bass in the chorus, obviously, is very kind of straight and dorky, almost on purpose, I think. And I do think they probably quantized everything. If I can, like, name drop a project that never actually came out and happened, one day I got to, you know this because you were there. One day I got to work with Dr. Dre, and I was for something he was producing that has never come out, and.
It's my next EP. Okay, we'll say it.
It was for your project. And I spent 3 hours making strings and he was like so into it. And then he was like, all right, to whoever the guy was like engineering me. He was like, all right, now quantize everything. And I was like, no. I just gave you like all my music school and all my parents' money. Like, I just gave it to you.
All my Kansas sleepaway camp experience.
Yeah, all those years of yearning for the tire swing. And you're just like, let's just make him into a machine. But that's what happens.
I mean, everyone works in different ways, and I don't mean to presume that there's one right way to do it, but that is uniquely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I want to make my point even clearer here that I'm so glad you agreed with me, in that I did find the a cappella version.
Oh.
And so I want to just play the bridge without the instrumentation, because I think you will see how much we don't need it. Like, and actually, in a lot of ways, how probably literally anything would have been better. I don't know how you could dampen this vocal. I love this vocal arrangement here. Here, listen. I hate that low vocal. It's insane.
When your days and your nights get a little bit colder,
I know that
you'll be right back, baby.
Oh, baby, believe me, it's only a matter of time. I mean, come on.
It's insane. The way that one thing comes in and interrupts the other, the choir thing gets picked up by her solo voice, and it's so cool.
It's so cool. I love it. I love it. I don't like that MIDI-ass keyboard, but I do love those vocals, and for that reason, I will allow the song to continue. Doesn't it feel like the last like 10 minutes of a basketball game and the coach is like, leave it all on the court? And then that counter melody.
Yeah, fourth cycle. You're not hearing that bass, dude.
I forgot to listen.
Now the bass stops. Gone. It's gone.
No.
Yeah, it's gone.
It cannot be.
Nobody would do that.
Why did they do that?
Because they knew they were going to fade out, so they like built it into the music a little bit, maybe?
Why not just fade the bass out, too? We didn't need the bass to come out first. The bass stays in the pool till the very end of the pool party.
I've never heard anything like it.
I'm not going to say this with any sort of authority, but I did pay attention to the bass for the middle of that, and it didn't really move me in the way it has moved the moose.
It's the combination of hitting the notes exactly where you would expect, but a couple of really well-placed syncopations where it's like, bum, 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 and then this, da, 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 dum. All of a sudden, there's like this one little melody that happens and it's really consistent. And I just think it's like, it's just perfect. Like, if you played anything else, it would be less good and you would just hear it in a track.
The subtlety.
He's not like bouncing around. He's not trying to be like reflecting the feel of what's above him, which I think is important because we have too much of that.
Are we in church? Okay. Preach.
Above him. Right. Did you listen to that song Exploder with Lindsey Buckingham, Go Your Own Way?
No, I didn't know Rishi did one with Lindsey.
Yeah, it was the 100th episode, I think.
What?
It was amazing. And he talked about how he made the bass player play along with his guitar part in a way, in the verses, in a way that he really didn't want to do. And then he wrote that incredible bum ba da 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 ba da da da. He was like, I forced him to do this thing. And then in the chorus, he like found this part that only he could have written. And I sort of feel like this bass player, who is also the co-producer, who is just playing a keyboard, like somehow steps into this persona in the chorus that I just really admire, especially when you consider everything else that's going on in the track. To me, it's like her voice and that bass part. If you wanted to kind of like add one thing to that isolated shit, I think it would sound really cool, that combo.
Wait, so then what does this mean for your punch up?
Nothing.
Wait, I'm sorry, Rob, did you get Jaco Pastores? Is that what I'm hearing?
He's back.
That feels like the kind of chocolate chip that a musician delights in finding in the pancake. You know what I mean?
I think you're right.
I think for me, as a true layman and showman, I want a little more pizzazz. I want a bass slide all the way from the top of the neck to the bottom of the neck.
You want a little more Hornsby in there.
Didn't Hornsby call you his number one perfect boy? Aren't you guys best friends now since you last came on?
I don't think any of those words were used.
Before we get to whatever magic you have done and enlisted, whatever dark army you work with, I think maybe we should get word from the weatherman on this episode.
Oh.
That's right. Oh. Just because you're on it doesn't mean there's not a weatherman. Someone's got to tell us the weather, of course. So I'm very pleased to announce that it's still you, I guess, isn't it? Don't you? Well, let's see.
Now, with all respect to Miss Christmas here, this song is an absolute Dorian reach around. But it works. After doing some moose digging for the last 48 hours, Mariah's famous whole note in the pre-coda is actually a secret cluster of eighth notes. And then when I did further digging, I found it to be a micro colony of 16th notes masquerading as a whole note, not unlike young people are doing in Buffalo, New York. As you can hear, some Rumpelstiltskin bitch is playing the piano in a manner that, if it existed anywhere outside of a pre-K recital, I'd delete my Gmail account and go straight into the wild. Boring. What is this, our town? Get me hopped up on Benadryl, put me inside my dad's piano, and let me rip Van Tickle those ivories better than this North American dipshit elbow play. The piano is right out of Storybook Weaver, and I can't stand it. This pre-Y2K MDOS squirt fest harkens back to a time where Chris Kattan ruled the earth, and Corky Romano, who I believe is a different person, ruled the box office. The Goodnight Moon meets Usher harpsichord intro makes me want to yell at my page boy and drink mead out of a good wench's open mouth, utilizing a circular breathing technique that were taught to me over a 14-week course taught brutally by John Cage's grandchildren. Under their tutelage, I spent 6 weeks in an intensive circular breathing training camp with the dude from the Dirty Projectors and his wives in what is now Austin, Texas. Mariah, interestingly enough, opts out of the expected Komodo's fourth, aka the Devil's Expressway, and instead dives landing strip first into the unresolved E chord, as if to say, I will one day be Nick Cannon's wife. But what am I glissandoing on about, listener? Let's get back to the soda. The doo-wop post-intro subcoda makes me lose sleep for an entire beaver moon. So sleep-deprived, dear listener, was your Captain Moose last week that I wandered backwards into a guitar center wearing naught but the trumpet mute over my themes and variations, yelling, arpeggiate this, bitches! Listening to the bridge gave me what I like to call a neurological reverse grinch, in that it made my brain shrink 6 cup sizes. My brain not only went off control, but also went gluten-free and did 6 weeks of pectoral heavy CrossFit. Now let's get back to this whole note. This is not the shriek of a VH1 diva. This is the shriek of a parking lot bird looking at a Frito-Lay truck. Of course, excuse me, I'm going to shadow box to the rest of Avenue Q.
That's the ending?
You had to go shadow box to Avenue Q, of course.
Wow. What an honor.
I hope you enjoyed.
I especially liked John Cage's grandchildren and dirty projectors and his wives in what is now Austin, Texas.
I think I gave myself a hernia. I'm gonna miss this. Okay. Okay, Pancha, will you please tell us what you're doing?
Well, I feel like with this song, as I said, I'm happy to listen to it 40 times in a row or all day or whatever. And part of what bums me out is that number one, that it ends. Number two, that it fades out. And number three, that like my very favorite part of the song, and I admire this, comes in 20 seconds or something before the end of the thing when she sings the "You and I." Like, she's got one more incredible melody in the tank, and she spends it once. And so I thought, I can't tell you what I'm doing because I haven't done it yet, but my idea was to kind of pick up somewhere at the end there and just let it kind of carry on and celebrate it. And so that, like, if you've heard the song 40 times like me, but you want to hear it a little bit more, like, we've got that extra cookie that you forgot about in the bottom of the bag.
I cannot wait to hear it.
And I am enlisting a friend to help me out with the whole singing part of it.
And are we going to say who that friend is?
Emily King.
Emily King! That's very exciting. Very exciting. Very exciting. Let's play the punch up now.
Always be a part of me. I'm part of you indefinitely. Boy, don't you know you can't escape me? Ooh, darling, 'cause you'll always be my baby. And we'll linger on. Time can't erase a feeling this strong. No way you're never gonna shake me. Ooh, darling, 'cause you'll always be my baby. Ooh.
Obviously, I haven't heard this as of recording, but I have heard Emily King because I got to see you and her in Madison Square Garden when I first got to New York, and it was such a goddamn treat. She is so exceptionally talented. She is such a fucking good performer. I can't believe, what did you keep calling her? She's Bruno Mars, but better.
Did I say that?
You said something like that. It was perfect. And it's so true. She's just the most charismatic. I'm obsessed with her. And I'm so excited that she had any hand. I'm so excited about this whole goddamn thing, Rob.
Yeah, she was able to make time from her busy hacky sack schedule to, you know, fit this in.
That's the craziest part. I don't think I ever said that on air. I got to see her open for Sarah Bareilles, the show that you, the tour that you musical directed and did that incredible solo in Madison Square Garden. That was so surreal. And then what, like 6 months later, I'm walking around Central Park and I'm like, hey, is that Emily King playing hacky sack?
And it was. It was like a deep quarantine moment, you know?
I guess that takes us straight to...
You can't punch this.
Unpunchable jams. I have two. Do you want to hear about them?
Yeah.
My first is Look At Me Now by Emily King.
Aw.
Did you hear about me? I got off the ground. I stood up when you left me, baby. Look at me now. Look at me now. Yeah. Did you hear about me? I'm making a name. I got a little money just playing the game. Look at me now.
When I first heard this, I think it was at that show. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, I think I'd heard it like maybe tangentially, but when I really heard it was at that show. And the moment it started, I was like, what is this? You know those songs where you just cock your head to the side like a dog being asked if it wants to go on a walk? And you're like, I'm listening. I love this song. I love this song. I don't need to say anything. Just listen to it. My next Unpunchable Jam, that's right, I'm doing two, is your and Phoebe Bridgers' version of Kyoto off of your record Copycat Killer.
Oh.
Day off in Kyoto, got bored at the temple, looked around at the 7-Eleven. The band took the speed train, went to the arcade. I wanted to go, but I didn't. You called me from the payphone. They said about payphones. It cost $1 a minute to tell me you're getting sober. And you wrote me a letter, but I don't have to read it.
I'm obsessed with your arrangement, Rob. I'm obsessed with it. It makes me sob. God. It makes me weep.
Thank you.
I can't believe I know the man who wrote that. It's unbelievable, Rob.
It's so intense. I actually cry most times I hear it too. I had to cut myself off.
I'm really relieved to hear that, actually, because that's the effect it has on me too.
I mean, I did tell her that I was trying to compose music that would be played at her funeral.
That's how I want every song to be. I want it to be music that plays at your own funeral.
Yeah.
Well, you achieved it. It's stunning. I played it for my parents. I was like, you guys got to hear the original. They don't know it, obviously. So I played them the original and they were like, pretty cool. And I was like, okay, now listen to this one. And they were like, that's our Rob. That is our Rob. And I was like, I bet it is.
Yeah, I mean, I've been really happy with what people have said about it, except for some things that I discovered where people are just like, why did this guy ruin this amazing song? It's the internet is a dark place. Don't go reading.
Oh, God.
Don't go reading Waterfalls.
Honestly, don't ever read the comments. That's what I've learned from 3 years of doing a podcast as a woman. Hey, what's your Unpunchable Jam?
Oh, I get to do one?
Yeah, you can do 7.
What was that Sufjan track I texted you about?
Video games.
Yeah, that's it.
That song. It was a great recommendation.
Not bassy enough, though.
Hey, listen. I contain multitudes. And one of those multitudes is a slippity slappity wet bass. And another one is just a vibe. And it does seem that you know me well enough to know the difference. So thank you for that.
I thought it had a chance.
Rob, I don't know if you know this. Obviously, you know the announcement that I have to make, but I have not announced it yet. And I thought it would be fortuitous to do it on the episode that you're on, since this has been our journey together for, what, a year now?
Yeah.
How long have you been doing the Weatherman segment? It's been a long time.
I think it's about exactly a year.
Yeah. So, is it okay with you if I speak directly to audience for a second?
Break the fucking wall.
Okay. I will bring it back to you. I promise. But right now we're speaking the royal you for a second. Okay. The announcement is this. We started this show, Demi and I, around Christmas 2017, and so it only feels right to be leaving the show for Christmas 2020. I don't know what HeadGum will do with it, if they're going to do anything with it, but as for me, it is my time to hang my golden overalls and hang glide into the eclipse. I don't know how to keep talking about this without being weird. Is that okay? Okay. I can't thank everybody. That's the main thing I want to say. I can't thank everybody enough for supporting the show, but also me, because the show is largely me and Marissa and Rob and Chris, obviously, but that's like kind of been, it's been us. So when you've been listening and when you've been interacting, and it's just a direct thank you. And it has felt amazing. The show has gone through so many evolutions for 3 years, and I've never not felt so fucking supported. And I think that's really rare. I mean, who gets to scream into a microphone about things they don't really know a lot about, but most things they really super don't know anything about, and have people actually listen, but also like thank them. I mean, I feel like I've pulled the greatest con of all time, and this has been nothing but a joy. And that's part of why I think now is the right time to go, because I would rather leave the bath before it gets cold. You know what I mean? Just go out on a high note. So I guess what I want to say is thank you to everyone for your support. And also, Rob, I want to say thank you to you, because I don't know what the show would have been without you. It was such an uncertain time doing the show as a solo person, moving to a new coast, and you were such an instrumental part in both of those things. And actually, I think it's fitting we did this song, because I felt like I was your and Shoko's baby, and you really did. And now you have a baby, so of course, yeah, okay, I'm the oldest, I get it. You know, I have a younger brother now, but... It's been one of the most legitimizing things of my life to have someone I admire so much be like, hey, can we do something together? So I can't thank you enough for doing this and for letting me force you to listen to Fall Out Boy. These have been personal and professional highs for me. So thank you so much for doing this with me for so long.
It's been so much fun. Thank you for giving me a chance to have a voice.
Are you kidding? I want everyone to know the name, Rob Moose. If you hear strings in any sort of indie song and you're like, well, not indie actually, but indie rock song, you're like, this is really tight. It's Rob Moose. In fact, hey, it doesn't have to be indie rock. Dr. Dre's EP with me coming out next year. So the next episode in 2 weeks will be the final episode with me. It'll be the finale effectively. So I'm very excited about it. Marissa said she listened to your segment for it, Rob, and that it was emotional. So I'm very excited to listen to that, and I'm very excited for the guest, and I'm very excited for the song, and I'm really happy to have had this run. And I don't know what else there is to say. I'll probably cry next time, but mostly scream, because that seems to be what I do the most. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, everybody. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Okay, that was
Touch
the Jam.
Touch
the Jam.
Hey!
Touch
the Jam.
Touch
the Jam.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.